Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Patriots 4th and 2. My name's Russ Goldman from Pats Confidential on PatsFans.com. And this is our very first show. Along with me is Damian Jarrett, who also has a blog on PatsFans.com called 4th and Long. And again, this is just our first show, so we are going to do our best to keep you entertained for 60 minutes talking about the Patriots. This is really a fan's view of the Patriots, not a media view. Neither one of us are media members. We're just fans who also have blogs, and we have opinions about the Patriots. So we're going to spend the next hour talking about it, breaking down this last game, which unfortunately was a loss for the Patriots, 34-31, to the Buffalo Bills. Certainly I have my thoughts on it. I know Damian has his. But first, I'll give you my opening statement on the Patriots game. Listen, I put a great deal of this game on the shoulders of Tom Brady. I hate to put it that way, but when you throw four interceptions, even though you have four touchdowns, you are taking away points from your club, and you're also giving the other team points. So very often when you throw four interceptions, you're not going to win. In fact, I did a little experiment today. I went and I checked out Peyton Manning's statistics over the course of his career. He has had five games where he has thrown more than four interceptions. In each one of those games, he has lost. So there is a correlation between turnovers, interceptions, and losing. Again, the loss does not go all on Tom Brady. Obviously, there are other factors in that. You know, a few of those interceptions you can obviously blame on his wide receivers. And then, you know, listen, we have plenty we could talk about the defense because they are to blame as well. This was a team loss. So I have plenty of thoughts on it, but that's my opening statement on the Patriots game. Damian, I'm going to give it over to you. What are your first thoughts on the game?
Thanks very much, Russ. Well, I think you pretty much summed it up pretty well there, to be honest. Like, people can say all they want about the defense. You know, there are obvious problems there. They're dead last in receiving yards allowed. But you're never going to win a game where you throw four interceptions. And especially when the opposing team gets 17 points off of those interceptions. If you think about it, you take away those four interceptions, you take away those 17 points, and you've won the game. At the end of the day, you know, like I say, the defense has got issues, and it has to take some of the blame. They could have come, they should have come up with a stop at the end and helped us out a little there. But you know, it's just too much to expect. You said it there with Peyton Manning's stats. You can't expect to win games where you throw four interceptions. You're never in the position to win those sort of games.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I actually saw part of Bill Belichick's press conference. He basically said that. He talked about the interceptions and turnovers, and you don't win many games with four turnovers. I mean, he basically said that. So, you know, again, I understand why many fans are throwing more of the blame on the defense, but this is a game where, for me as a fan, it's a complete loss, but you do have to put some of the blame on the turnovers. I'm sorry, Damon, did you have something you wanted to say?
Oh, well, I was just going to say, I just agree with you really there and say it kind of takes you back to like the famous Jim Mora speech where he came out of the press and says you can't throw the defense under the bus on a game like that, you know. There were plenty of the defense gave the offense plenty of opportunities to win this game and put it away, and the offense didn't reply, unfortunately. And that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, if you want to join Damian and myself, you can definitely give us a call. The number to reach us is 347-215-7276. You can call us on a regular phone, or if you have Skype, you can use Skype and you can contact us. We certainly would love to hear from Patriots fans on this game. Feel free to give us a call. But even if you don't, we certainly have plenty to talk about. But again, the first thing that I definitely wanted to speak about, again, let's go a little bit more into the Brady interceptions and Brady's play, because I do think that some of the blame does go on Brady's shoulders. But, Damian, let me ask you, how many of those interceptions would you correlate directly to Brady and how many to his receivers?
Well, if, you know, we'll break them down individually. I mean, the first one, Woodhead has to turn his head. You know, he's running, he's 5 yards downfield, he's not looking for the ball. That's solely on Woodhead. If he turns his head just a second earlier, that's a catch. You know, and we completely avoid that scenario. Then you have the Ocho Cinco scenario. A lot of people are blaming Ocho Cinco for that interception. He had an issue in preseason where he dogged it a little bit on a route, a similar route. You can put some of that on Ocho Cinco, definitely, but Brady's got to sit there and he's got to see that at the same time. He's got plenty of time back there. He has one of the best defensive lines in the league, and there's just no excuse to make that kind of throw in that situation. You had the deflections as well, you know, the deflected interception for the touchdown. You know, that's tough to put on Brady. You know, the Bills made a play on that one, and it paid off. But the one that stood out the most for me was when he forced it to Gronkowski down the seam. And again, Tom Brady has time back there, and he has to be able to read that, and he shouldn't be forcing that kind of throw.
Yeah, absolutely. That is the one that definitely sticks out to me. But the Ocho Cinco one, for me, could have gone either way. I think that Ocho Cinco didn't run the best route, but I was also thinking maybe Brady forced it a little bit to him. And it was very bad timing, because right before that, the defense had a nice three and out to start the second half. So it really just started a bad chain of events for the Patriots. And that's, you know, and that happens with turnovers. We, you know, honestly, from last season, we're not used to seeing this. Tom Brady had 4 interceptions the entire season. He had 4 in this game. And that's something that, you know what, it happens. And that's why I'm not going to, you know, for me, it's not a trend. Do I think that Tom Brady's going to have a game like this again? No. In fact, I think the last time he had a game like this, well, I believe, was, I want to say, 2006. I mean, it hasn't happened often in his career. Like I mentioned, Peyton Manning has only had 5 of them. These are elite quarterbacks. It doesn't happen that often. But when it does, more than likely, you're going to lose. And that's and that's just how it usually goes in those types of situations. Again, the phone number to reach us is 347-215-7276. And we'd love to hear from Patriots fans on this game. Now the second thing, Damien, I wanted to talk to you about, you briefly mentioned Chad Ocho Cinco.
Yeah.
He did struggle in this game.
Yeah.
Are you concerned about his play moving forward?
I'm going to refer to a previous post I actually made on my blog, 4th and Long. And that is, I'm going to start with talking about the expectation that was put on Ocho Cinco's shoulders when he came here, and by the press and by a lot of fans. People said he was going to do big things here under Brady, and people were expecting 1,000 yards or double-digit touchdowns. And you know, that's too much to expect in this Patriots offense. I mean, he is struggling. There's no doubt about that at all. And it's you know, it's a shame to see. He was, you know, a once great player coming to this team and struggling like he is. But the Patriots offense is extremely complicated, and he's coming here on a shortened off season where he hasn't had the OTAs and things like that to develop with his team. And when it comes to receiving, you can teach technique, you can teach the playbook, but what you can't teach is how a player can combine those two and turn that into production on the field. And right now, that's where he's struggling. He's thinking too much, and the weight of that expectation on his shoulders is weighing him down, and it's reflecting badly on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I'm willing to give him more than enough time. I've heard some talk of some fans today on some of the talk shows suggesting cutting Ocho Cinco. And I'm completely against this. Plus, it makes no sense. He makes too much money. The Patriots are not going to cut Ocho Cinco, Damien. It just isn't going to happen. And, you know, honestly, I'm willing to give him as much time as he needs. I know that doesn't sound well, but I think that eventually he is going to get it. There is another option once he gets healthy in Taylor Price. I wouldn't be shocked if we start seeing Taylor Price once he can get back in the lineup. But I'm not willing to give up on Ocho Cinco, because I think you mentioned he has the desire.
Mm-hmm.
to make it work. Joey Galloway didn't have this desire. That's why he didn't work out.
This is a different situation.
Would you agree, Damian?
I'd agree 100%. You know, the one thing I think we can all agree on is that he's putting in the work. His teammates say so. We hear from the likes of Mike Reese that, you know, he's definitely putting in the effort. And, you know, the only slight concern I have is that Tom Brady's not going to throw to someone who's dropping passes. And his drop around the one-yard line, he would have gone in for a touchdown. That was an absolute shambles. There's no doubt about that. He admitted it himself. And if he continues to do that, if Brady continues to feel he's not running his routes properly, he's just not going to throw to him, and that trust isn't going to be there. But like you said, like Taylor Price is a promising prospect coming up. He has the hamstring problem, you know, which should sort itself out around now. So he should be coming back, and that will take something off of Ocho Cinco. But you know, I think you're quite right. I don't think we should be cutting him. I think we should be just giving him the benefit of the doubt. And the CBS reporters touched on it briefly as well. Teams have to respect the fact that he's on the field. Like, they can't look at what he's doing at the moment and say, well, we can leave him alone. He's not going to be any harm. Because if you do that, he's going to tear you apart. The team defenses have to respect the fact that he's on the field, and that's what he adds to this team. That's the dimension he adds. And if he's catching just two or three balls for 40 yards a game, he's letting defenses know he's there. And if you don't respect that threat, he is going to rip you to shreds.
Well, listen, let's look at the pass that he dropped. He was open. He was open. He did stretch the defense. So,
yep.
Yes, he did not catch the ball. But he did exactly what we are hoping he can do. You know, I don't expect him, and I don't think there are fans that expect this guy to be Randy Moss, because that's not what he is. And I'm not expecting that. But he can give you that deep threat. And he showed that. Unfortunately, he dropped the ball. You know, and that's a situation where you really can't be dropping the ball. But I really truly believe with Chad that this is a confidence thing, and I think we just need to give him more time before passing any more judgment on the guy. The going to Oakland, let's see him play. You know, hopefully he'll get some more snaps and get a chance to show us, you know, that he belongs to be out there. Because you know what, Damian, he does belong to be out there.
Yeah.
I just really truly, going back to this, I think it's all about confidence.
Yep.
And once he gets it, I think we're going to see something that could be quite special. I'm talking about someone that could help us. That's what I mean by special. Not Randy Moss special, just someone that gives us another dynamic to the offense. Because right now, we can complain about the offense, about the turnovers, but the reason why, in my opinion, a big part of the reason why they lost that game was they turned the ball over.
It was mistakes.
Yeah. There is no strong weakness I see in this offense right now. They beat themselves.
Definitely, I agree.
You know, and that to me is something, you know, something to take out of all of this as a positive, even with the four interceptions. If Brady doesn't have one of those interceptions, the Patriots win.
Definitely.
Well, listen, looks like we have someone about to join us on the line, and I'm about to bring him in, and it looks like it is Steve. Steve, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay, Steve. Thank you for coming on. This is Steve, who also has a blog on PatsFans.com. Steve, would you like to just briefly introduce yourself to everyone listening?
Yes, Russ, thanks. I'm Steve Balistrieri. I write for PatsFans.com. Tonight, I'm sure what's on everyone's mind, we're going to talk about the debacle yesterday. It's not many times I can remember a Bill Belichick team blowing a 21-0 lead in the second quarter anyway. So I just popped in on the end of what you guys were saying. And, you know, I'll just join in with what you're talking about right now.
Okay, great. Well, we're pretty much finished talking about Ocho Cinco. Do you have any thoughts on Ocho Cinco, Steve?
Well, the main thought, I mean, the interception where Brady threw it over the middle, I thought, I saw Troy Brown last night, and I'll bow to his wisdom because he knows more about the pass offense than I do. It didn't seem like he ran a bad route. It seemed like the throw was behind him, but he said that Ocho should have broke it off. I'll bow to that. My only issue with him yesterday was if he catches that touchdown in the end zone, there's almost 8 minutes left on the clock, and if the Patriots had given up a score, which they inevitably did to the Bills, they would have had about 4 minutes left for Brady to go down and either tie it up, send it to overtime, or win the game if they had held them to a field goal. That was my only issue with Ocho. Other than that, he's still a work in progress, and he seems to be working hard. I know he's getting frustrated. The only thing that stood out to me was when he dropped the ball, I looked at Tom Brady yesterday, and his reaction was nothing. And usually if somebody drops a ball or they miss an opportunity to put points on the board, Brady is very, very demonstrative in his actions. And yesterday he had no reaction whatsoever, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'd be curious to try to figure out what that actually means, because Damien and I were just talking before that, and I'm concerned as well, but Damien is concerned that Brady will lose confidence and will not be looking for Ocho Cinco because of some of these issues that they've had. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think he will. I think he'll continue to give him a shot. I know that, like, after the first interception, when they came back on the field, he went right back to him. So, at that point, he went with Welker, and it seemed like Welker and Gronkowski were the only two people he was looking at, really, all day, which isn't like Tom Brady at all. And I think he'll go back to Ocho. I don't think Ocho's burned his bridges here. I know I heard you talk about Joe Galloway earlier. I just popped in. So I don't think he's reached that level yet.
Oh, I don't think he has either. I think, as I was trying to explain, the two players are completely different because I don't think Joey Galloway really gave the effort to be part of this offense. Ocho Cinco, I think, is doing everything that he can, and I think it's just a struggle for him right now. Have it not be so mechanical. I think he's just thinking about it too much. I think he's trying too hard. And I think over time, these rough edges are going to work itself out because he has the desire. And that's what's frustrated me. Listening to some of the phone calls and some of the talk shows today, many of them were cut Ocho Cinco. And I'm just not there with that. You know, I don't get it. I don't understand it. It makes no fiscal sense. The Patriots aren't going to do it regardless. But, you know, you got to give a guy a chance. You know, we're only three games into the season. And like Damien and I were talking before, the one encouraging thing was that he beat his man. He beat his man, Steve. He was open. So
that to me was
encouraging.
And Brady made a perfect throw. I mean, that was where every wide receiver wants it. He had some separation. He didn't have to break stride, and it was right in his hands. I mean, the play was perfectly designed and executed, except for the final phase of it, which was him pulling the ball in. But I think that, every week we're seeing a little bit of improvement with him, whereas with Galloway in the past or other guys, we didn't see that. You know, we saw the same things. It's baby steps, I guess, with him. But, you know, as long as Brady has Gronkowski and Welker and Branch other than yesterday, you know, one of the things that surprised me was that he only went to Deion Branch three times. And I thought that was kind of odd since Branch had two big games, and it seemed like the Bills were keying on Welker and Gronkowski after the first half. I'm surprised he didn't go back to Branch more, but I don't sit in the huddles. I don't know what they're seeing on their films, but That to me was odd.
You know what, Steve? I completely agree with you, and that actually goes into the next talking point that I had for both of you, and I'll throw it to Damien, and then you can give your response on it too. Steve brought up the point that I was thinking. The Patriots really focused on Rob Gronkowski and Wes Welker the majority of the game, and Deion Branch was not a focal point. Why do you think that was, Damien?
Like I say, the Patriots are generally focused on creating mismatches, and from what I saw going back over the game today was where they were lining up Welker. That's what's interesting in his case. They were lining him up so that he was covered by linebackers, and that's what they do best. They get players into positions where they can excel, and Welker was the vast majority of the time lined up on linebackers that just couldn't cover his speed and agility, and that's what they were aiming to do, and it paid off, and obviously that reflects in his 200-yard game and two touchdowns. You know, Gronkowski, I think he's always a focal part of the game plan. That guy's a mismatch nightmare for anyone with the sheer height and speed for a guy that size. Like I say, I have no idea why they didn't key in on Branch. The only explanation I could think of is they saw something that they liked and they exploited it with Welker and Gronkowski. They kind of dealt with Gronkowski a little later in the game, and we saw that when Brady, you know, forced that throw to him. They would, you know, they had found a way to cover him, and unfortunately Brady tried to force it. But for me, they clearly saw something they liked, and they matched Welker up against the players they wanted to, and they had their way with them.
Yeah, I tend to agree with your analysis. I think it was spot on. Steve, do you have anything else to add on what he said about Branch?
No, I think that was very, very spot on as well. I haven't had a chance to look at the tape again. So, you know, I didn't see where they had him lined up. But, yeah, they did have mismatches on Welker all day. And pretty much they have a mismatch with Gronkowski no matter where they line him up. Because, I mean, he ran by the safety yesterday. I was, you know, on that one play down near the goal line, he ran right by the safety. And, you know, he's impossible to cover with a linebacker. The only thing, you know, I thought they should have tried to get Branch Moore in, but perhaps they were blanketing him. I don't know. I thought they should have got the backs more involved in the passing game as well. Since the Bills don't really have that much of a pass rush, I figured, you know, that would be more of a safety valve, but they really didn't.
You know what, Steve? You keep setting me up for my next talking point, my friend. I'm going right into the running backs.
Yeah.
You know. This is beautiful. You're just setting me right up because I'm going to throw this right to you.
Three of us.
Yeah. Why do you think? You brought up a point about throwing to the backs, but forget about throwing to the backs. Why were the backs really not even a small, I wouldn't even call it a small part of the offense in this game? That part puzzled me. So I want your thoughts on that.
Yeah, the one thing I did notice, I mean, the Bills recognized last year, and I'd have to recheck it, but I believe they were last in the league against the run last year. And they brought in a bunch of new parts to combat that. They brought in Darius. They brought in a couple of linebackers. And they were really solid against the run yesterday. I know that I think Green Ellis only had about 16 or 18 yards rushing. And Ridley got some yardage at the end of the game, but that was after Brady had been gashing them pretty much all game, and they were catching them, I think, cheating a little bit, you know, back into the coverage. But I think the Bills have really righted their ship, so to speak, in terms of their running game defense, which was terrible last year. I think having Darius and Williams in the middle with Barnett as an inside linebacker, I think that's really helped them a lot.
Damon, what are your thoughts on the running backs?
I'm gonna talk about the impact on the run game, the fact that we only have one tight end in this game. Obviously, we cut Dan Gronkowski earlier in the week, and Hernandez is out with his MCL sprain. And I talked about this briefly on my blog as well. Those three tight end sets create an air of unpredictability about the Patriots' offense. And I think that's what drives some of our success in the run game. Like, teams, when they scout you, they're looking for tendencies in personnel packages. And the thing is, they have such so they have tight ends with such a great skill set that you really can't tell out of those three and two tight end sets what they're actually planning on doing. And that in turn benefits the run game because you can't cheat either way. And the fact that we only had Gronkowski out there, I think that affected it in a little way. We kind of went back to pre-2010 a little bit. And that's when, you know, we have very little success on the run because we were just so predictable. And I think that had a great effect on it.
Yeah, you bring up a very valid point because I really think that they went into this game that if this was a matchup game, I think they've made up their mind they were not going to run the ball before the game was even played. The game plan I don't think really involved the running backs, and it's unfortunate because I think that there were situations where a running game, running some plays, and I hate to put it to this, running some clock maybe, could have benefited the Patriots. I'm not looking for a complete balance, but I'm looking for a little bit more running. But I'm agreeing with you, Damien. I think it had a great deal to do with the fact that they only had one tight end, and I think that was done by design. I think that they really went on the idea that they were just gonna light it up by throwing. Yeah. And it's too bad. We did get to see a little bit of Ridley and Steve, you just think that his yardage had to do with late in the game, and it really wasn't much really to really analyze.
Yeah, you know, I think at the point where he came in, at that point, I think, you know, Brady had already passed for well over 300 yards, I think, at that point. So, you know, the Bills were kind of, they were in pass coverage, basically. They looked like they were going more toward their sub-packages from what I saw. And, again, I haven't looked at the tape again yet. But I do agree with Damien. I mean, when they go to the two linebackers, they're much more effective running. I think it was by design because they had Garrett Mills. They could have activated him for this game. Or they could have moved somebody out to the tight end, one of their reserve offensive linemen, and they chose not to. I think they saw what the Raiders had done to the Bills, and Jason Campbell passed for over 300 yards, and they saw with their wide receivers they should be able to do much more, and in fact they did. If they hadn't had a few turnovers down in the red zone, I mean, Brady might have put 50 points on the board.
Yeah, and that's, it's funny you mention it because I'm really starting to believe that that's exactly what this is all about. I just really believe, even though I'm hearing all this talk about the running game, I just feel that the Patriots game plan really, it wasn't in it. And you could see it by their actions, by who was dressed. Why wasn't Garrett Mills put on the active roster? It's because the game plan was we were just going to try to light it up through the air. And good point, Steve, because they really should have had 50 points, honestly. They left so many points on the board.
Exactly. I mean, I've been listening as much as I can today with work and whatnot, but I've been listening to a lot of the talk radio and the television shows, and they talk about what a great job the Bills did. And truthfully, Brady made some uncharacteristic mistakes, or they could have put 50 points on the board. They had over 500 yards of offense, so, I mean, or very close to it, if not 500. I don't consider that a very good game plan. I mean, they did get the turnovers, and I'll give them that.
Yep.
And their offense looks really good, but, you know, the Patriots were missing some key components yesterday, and they still had their way with them except for the mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's, you know, and that's what I got out of this. I left not impressed at all by the Buffalo Bills defense. In fact, my next article, I put that as a focal point. Because, yes, they did make some key plays to cause turnovers, and that's important. That's part of good defense. But honestly, Tom Brady had his way with them. He beat, I'm sorry, go ahead, Steve.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, we're looking at it as a horrible day for him, which, I mean, with four picks, it is a horrible day, but he still threw for 300 and I think it was 87 yards and four touchdowns. And, you know, a couple of touchdowns that if they could have had back in the red zone, you're looking at well over 400 yards again and six touchdowns. That's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty impressive day for the offense. But I give the Bills just as much credit, and I know you're probably going to get to this next, but
yep,
they had their mismatches on their offense dialed in perfectly. I'm thinking to the very last possession they had, when somehow they isolated Nelson on Brandon Spikes, which was a total mismatch. And that just killed the Patriots there.
Yeah, well, you just segued me into the second part of the show, which we're going to talk about the defense. And I'm all set to talk about that. And you brought up a great point. I read a really good article today by Greg Bedard of the Boston Globe, who had some quotes by I can't remember the receiver, but basically said of the Bills that they knew that the Patriots would be in man and that they could take advantage of it. In fact, the Patriots did play some zone, and the Bills had trouble when they went to zone, but they opened up the second half back in man-to-man, and that's when the Bills feasted once again. They knew that they had matchup advantages, and they were very confident, and then they really took advantage of it. So that goes to me to the first first question to you, Damian,
yep,
on the defense. Let's talk about the defensive backs. Let's start with the safety play.
Yep.
Tell me about the safety play.
And this is where a previous point made by Steve about key components missing. We were missing Rashad Dowling, and we were missing Patrick Chung. And we had, you know, we had Sergio Brown getting a few more reps than we probably wanted to give him in that game, and I noticed going back over some of the games on NFL Game Pass that Sergio Brown was very late coming into, you know, breaking up routes, and he seemed to be there just a second later than he should be. I mean, there was a standout play on a 3rd and 8 where we were all out blitzing. We sent every linebacker, and Sergio Brown needs, you know, and Fitzpatrick hit his receiver 4 steps into his slant route, and Sergio Brown should have been coming underneath and jumping that, but he just didn't really seem to have a clue what he was doing. And on top of that, you have Bodden on who primarily for the previous two games has been lining up inside. We've been playing him a lot more in the slot, and we've been lining up Rashai Dowling outside, and that was a bigger loss than I think some people may have thought it might be, because Rashai Dowling's been doing a good job on the outside, and Bodden was beat deep a couple of times, very very bad, one for at least 30 yards, and so injuries really hurt us in that secondary, you know, in a young secondary that hasn't had time that long to gel together, and is missing veterans from last season as well.
Yeah, you basically bringing up all the points that I was thinking about the secondary, because obviously they had a really really tough day, and Sergio Brown and Lee Bodden, as much as anyone, everyone's focusing on Devin McCourty, but you can't look past Lee Bodden, because I thought Lee Bodden was just as bad, and you know, Kyle Arrington did make some plays, so we have to give some props to him.
Yeah.
But overall, the defensive backs were poor. Steve, do you have any comments on the defensive backs play?
Oh, they were really bad yesterday. They were playing up tight as I've seen Patriots defensive backs play in quite a few years. They were trying to jam them, but they didn't do a good job of doing that at the line of scrimmage, and the Bills' wide receivers were getting free release. And, you know, as you know, once wide receivers get a free release, they're gonna get open. And Bodden in particular had a very bad day with that, I thought. I agree with Damian with the safety play. Brown was about a second late, and, you know, I kind of expect that because this is really his first year with getting a lot of reps. And I remember Patrick Chung, his first year, he commented that his first year it was he was trying to remember all the calls and all the signals, and that by the time he got to react, the play was already in front of him. And I think that will come with time. We definitely miss Patrick Chung back there. But the cornerbacks, once again, the cornerback play wasn't good. I thought Arrington did pretty good. He made two nice plays on interceptions. But overall, no, the secondary was poor.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that 100%. I thought they were very poor. Okay, so we talked about the defensive backs, but I want to talk about a player that was a key in on my post for keys to victory, and was very disappointed that he was not more of a focal point of the defense of the defensive game plan, and that's Jerod Mayo. Jerod Mayo has not been let loose yet by the defense, meaning being able to shoot the gaps, being able to really rush the passer, and be a real playmaker. He is being asked to drop a lot in coverage and basically read and react from a linebacker position. It's been something that has really bothered me. I've been waiting to see them change up the style a little bit, and they haven't. And Jerod Mayo's play is indicative of it. It's everything that we've seen from him. He is solid. He makes the tackles. I believe he had 5 tackles. But I believe Mayo has so much more to offer, and I don't think, in my opinion, he's being used properly. And I know it's taboo to point the finger at Belichick, but guess what? I am. And we'll get into that a little bit later. Steve, I want your thoughts on Jerod Mayo and if you think he's being used properly.
I think he's being underutilized. I firmly agree with you there. I mean, I think he has it in him to be one of the more dominant linebackers in the league. And for some reason, they seem unwilling to cut him loose, I guess would be the correct term. I mean, we've watched Mayo, and we know what he can do. And it's not only him, but it's the entire defensive scheme. I think we went into this season expecting them to be a lot more aggressive in shooting the linebackers. And I expected to see Mayo and Guyton alternating, you know, shooting up a few gaps. And Guyton, I think, only played about 10 snaps yesterday. I might be wrong, but I haven't seen the exact breakdown. But I only saw Guyton, I think, for a handful of snaps, and with a team that was airing it out, you would think he would be in there more. But overall, no, I don't think they use Mayo to the extent of his ability.
Yeah, you know, and I would obviously agree with that. I brought that up, so obviously I feel that way.
Yeah.
Damian, you had a few stats about Mayo. Would you like to share that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we didn't blitz very much at all in yesterday's game, and when we did, we did send Mayo the majority of the time. Unfortunately, he wasn't very effective. He was blitzed on 8 times, and he only got 1 hit on the QB as far as from my analysis of the game. I think generally you guys touched on it. The mainly is you've kind of looked back to Tampa Bay and the way we played there, and people really want to see that in the regular season. And we really tore up Tampa Bay starters when we came out in a traditional base 4-3, which is a naturally aggressive defense, and it allows players like Mayo to make big plays, and that's what we've really lacked from Mayo recently. Like you look at his stat sheet, and he led the league in tackles last year, but he hasn't had an interception in his career. He's had 1 forced fumble in each of his years so far, but there are very few sacks, and that's kind of what you want to see Bill Belichick do. Mayo is a beast, to put it bluntly. He's physically gifted. He's smart. He's probably the smartest player on that defense, and you kind of want to give him that 4-3 freedom to roam and rush the passer, and it doesn't look like the Patriots are doing that very much. I mean, the actual stat on their blitzes was 16.9% of defensive plays, and that's too low. That's way too low.
Yeah, Damian, listen, I agree with you 100%. The three of us will go in a little bit deeper. At the very end, I would say probably for the last 15 minutes talking about the defensive philosophy, I really want to hit home on that because we're touching on it a little bit, but I just want to touch on a couple more subjects before we get there. Both of your thoughts, I'll start with Steve, just on Brandon Spike's play. He didn't look like he had a good game, obviously. What are your thoughts about what's going on with Mr. Spikes?
I still don't think Spikes is 100% healthy. No, he didn't have a good game, but he's just getting back into the lineup. And I thought that Buffalo did a very good job of game playing. They isolated people on Spikes, and you know when he was in coverage on people, he did well. That's not his strength. Let's be fair and be politically correct and say coverage isn't Spike's strong suit. No, I didn't think Spikes had a good game at all either. I thought at a couple of times he over-pursued in the running game. He overran the gap, and that's not like him. He's very instinctive. I just thought he struggled, as did most of the defense yesterday.
Okay. Damian, what are your thoughts on Brandon?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Steve wholeheartedly on that. You know, there was a couple of standout plays where he was matched up on a tight end or on the running back, and he just got beat badly. And you know, there's no two ways about that. In fact, I think the touchdown pass in the red zone against us, where the receiver was wide open, you saw Brandon Spikes running back after he completed the pass, and it kind of looked like that he'd blown a coverage there as well. So, you know, I think that was quite possibly on him. And something I want to obviously touch on something Steve said as well was over-pursuing and leaving the gap open. There was more than one occasion watching replays where he got turned around by the guard and out of the play completely, leaving a gaping hole where he just got completely fooled by any form of, like, misdirection or even just counterstep. He was thrown completely off, and that's not like him. And like I say, he was caught off guard a couple of times, and the offensive lineman was just turning him around, and there was free running room for Fred Jackson straight up the middle.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, listen, I was just really disappointed. I really thought that I would see a jump in his play in year two. Mm. Maybe Steve's right. Maybe he's still not 100%. But he again, like Steve said, he's just not the swiftest of players.
No.
And I think maybe he is more on, he should be more in there in run situations and obviously on passing downs.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to obviously briefly touch on what Steve said about Guyton as well. I mean, Guyton wasn't utilized very much at all. And you would like to see maybe Guyton, who has a little bit more speed, not as talented as an all-round linebacker, but has a little bit more speed. You'd want to see him out there in those situations rather than Brandon Spikes.
I agree with you. Now, I actually got a tweet from one of my followers who basically asked a question. So I'm going to throw it out to the two of you. This is from Kelly at K Run Bike Run. With respect to the injuries, do you honestly see this defense improving? Damian, what do you think?
I do. I mean, we're going to touch on Bill Belichick's defensive philosophy after this.
Yes.
That's a factor. But I think what you've got to really look at is we've lost Sanders, we lost Page, and we lost Merriweather. And those are three key veterans from last year's defense. This is a very young secondary, and I'm focusing mainly on the secondary because that is the problem. And they're gonna gel. It's going to take time. They had a limited off-season, and as they get better and get more experience and get more familiar with situations, they're going to improve. And I can't see them getting any worse, to be honest. So, you know, you've got to kind of hope that as the season goes on, like last year, they're going to pick up the slack.
Steve, what do you think?
I hate to sound like a broken record because we're all agreeing with each other, but yes, I agree with Damian 100%. I think not only the three members of the secondary, but there was eight members of the defense who had extended snaps or were starters who aren't here this year. And with such a turnover in the defense, you're going to have struggles early in the season. There's nowhere for them to go but up. I think today or yesterday was rock bottom for them. I mean, you know, they gave up a lot of points, they gave up a lot of yards, and they gave them up at the crunch time at the end. So that's very unlike Belichick and the Patriots. I think there's a lot of new players here. I think that the secondary has a long way to go, especially with the communication. That's why Daniel touched on with Sanders gone. Sanders was the guy that was his specialty. And he was the guy that had the communication down pat where everybody was, when they were out there, they were, if they got beat, they were going to get beat physically, not because they blew an assignment. And yesterday they seemed like they got confused a few times, especially down in that red zone touchdown. And it's going to take time, but there's a lot of new pieces out here.
You know what? I agree with both of you, and obviously this is a broken record. We are talking the same thing. But I truly do believe that this defense is going to improve. I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of new faces, trying to figure out exactly what they have and what they don't have. And I think it's still taking time to gel. I think Haynesworth not playing, and believe it or not, I think that was a factor as well in that game. So injuries are playing a factor. But beyond injuries, I do see this defense improving. But the one thing that I do want to talk about that I think is something that I think would help the improvement is the defensive philosophy, and I want to talk to you guys about that. But before I do, I want to read something to both of you. I got this from an episode of Quick Slants with Tommy Curran a couple weeks ago, September 15th, he had on Rodney Harrison. Rodney Harrison was asked about the Patriots defense in the past, about his experiences in the defense and what the defense is right now. Here are Rodney Harrison's comments. In 03 and 04, when we had most of our success, we were an attacking style of defense with Romeo Crennel as our coordinator. We played a lot of man-to-man coverage. We locked down our corners on the outside. We would blitz linebackers, safeties. We had a lot of communication with a lot of disguise. Then all of a sudden, they started getting away from that. They became a very conservative defense. And that bothered me because I felt like it was more of a mentality. Bend, but don't break. Now, I feel like they have an opportunity to come out here and establish themselves. They got big guys up front. They have a very athletic secondary. This is a team, and I was really proud just seeing these guys blitzing and moving around and stemming around, things that made us successful. That's what Rodney Harrison said on Quick Slants on Comcast Sportsnet New England on September 15th. So this was a couple weeks ago. And I could tell that Rodney's talking about what he has seen in preseason more than what we've seen so far. So that pretty much sets up my feelings about the defensive philosophy. Because at one point, guys, they were an aggressive defense when Romeo Crennel was the coordinator in 03 and 04. And as Rodney brought out, things did change. They are now more conservative. So I'm going to ask the two of you, should Bill Belichick be called out for this? Why have they not changed the philosophy when they have shown us in preseason that the possibilities of a more aggressive style of defense? Do you put some blame at the foot of Bill Belichick? I'll start with you, Damian.
I would agree with you to an extent. Like there is, Belichick does need to be called out a little bit. I mean, I've gone over all the formations and all the blitzes that we ran in all of our games, you know, from week one, and we just haven't been blitzing very often, and it's quite it's quite sad to see. Now, in Belichick's defense, teams are spreading offenses against us. You cannot really play a traditional 4-3 against a four wide receiver set because, like we do with other teams, you get mismatch nightmares and you're going to get shredded. But Belichick's coming out in a solely 3-3-5 sub package, and I counted only two plays. In yesterday's game where we played in a base 4-3, and I completely agree with what you touched on. We have like great players to play that 4-3 system. We've got the linemen to do it, and we've got the physical linebackers to rush the passer. We've got a very physical safety in Chung, and I don't think Bill Belichick is quite utilizing him in the way that he should be. And you know, and he's playing a very conservative style of defense.
Yeah, and that's what concerns me, Damian, is that what we saw in the preseason, was it just smoke and mirrors? I mean, is he just going back to the game plans? You know, we are a game plan specific team, which is fine. I understand in certain situations, but we are now three games into this, and we have not seen signs of anything that we saw earlier on. Did you have something you had to say?
I was going to point out, I mean, I was kind of hoping we would see the 4-3 style of defense we saw against Tampa, against the
right.
Bills. I mean, but the Bills recently, the last couple of games, they've been doing what top teams do, and they're spreading out the field on offense, and they're causing problems. And so I can see why Belichick may have stuck with a similar philosophy to what he did against San Diego, because you just can't come out in a base defense against four receivers like that. It just doesn't work. But, you know, hopefully we're going to be coming up against Oakland in a week's time. They are a run first. They're a power offense, a run first, establish the run, then pass on you. That is going to be Belichick's ideal opportunity to utilize a 4-3 and show the league what he can do with it and what he can do with Mayo. And I would hope we do see that in a week's time.
You bring up a valid point, because Jason Campbell and that Raider offense is perfect for an attacking style defense to just tear him apart.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you're right, Damian, because that's what I think the three of us, I don't mean to speak for you, Steve, but I think we do want to see more of an aggressive style of defense. So I will throw it to you. What are your thoughts about what I just read to you by Rodney and the fact that they're really not playing this attacking style of defense?
Exactly. I did see that with Rodney a few weeks ago, and I agree with him. For the past couple of years, after Romeo left, they went through a variety of different quote-unquote defensive coordinators, whether they had it in name or in whatever. And they were very conservative. And that seems to be permeated the psyche of the defense there. They tend to sit back. Well, we were watching last week in San Diego, and I'm sure it was game plan specific, the linebackers were taking 10 or 12 yard drops. And you can't blitz anybody from back there. And they made very little attempt to get after Rivers. They made virtually no attempt to overload. You know, they would rush four. They might have three down linemen and blitz Mayo or Ninkovich off the outside. But I think they only came after, I can only remember a handful of times where they came after Fitzpatrick with more than four rushers. And the one time that they did, and I remember the Bills had it third and long. They were backed up near their end zone, and they blitzed Fletcher and Ninkovich off the outside, and they forced him to get rid of it before he wanted to. That's just something they need to do more of, and especially with a secondary that's struggling. You have to attack more because it gives your secondary less time to get burnt. And it's a philosophy, you know, you might give up a big play. I know the last few years, Belichick has been, that's his focus, is he doesn't want to give up a big play.
Yeah. But,
you know, sometimes I would rather give up one big one and get the defense off the field, three and outs, four or five times than to see him get chewed up piecemeal all game long.
You know, I'm right there with you, and it's funny because when I bring up Romeo Crennel, I think Romeo Crennel is missed, and I don't, and I'm not saying that because I think that Bill Belichick is still not the greatest defensive coach I've ever seen. I think that Romeo Crennel was a voice that could actually talk, you know, that they could actually bounce ideas off of. And I don't know if he has that kind of relationship now with anyone there because he is now the superior. And I think he just does what he normally does. I think by nature, Bill Belichick's defenses have been more on the conservative side before Romeo got there. What do we know of the Patriots defense? It was bend but don't break. That was the 2001 Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo gets there, and the defense was game plan specific, but I can give you games where they attacked. Against Philadelphia, when Donovan McNabb was the quarterback, they went after him with Teddy Bruschi. They did it in the Super Bowl in 2004.
They did
attack when they needed to, and that's what's missing here. And again, I know you shouldn't be attacking Bill Belichick, and again, I'll say it again, he's the greatest coach I've ever seen. But someone's got to say something and speak up and say, where is the attacking defense? What's changed it? You've got the personnel to do it now. He's got I'm sorry, Steve, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was going to say, he's got defensive backs playing man-to-man, which is an aggressive style, but in front of it, he's got a front seven playing read and react, a conservative style. It's like you have two different styles going on during the game. It's a little strange.
Yes,
what do
is.
You think,
and
Steve?
I'll tell you, just the NFL has morphed into such a pass-happy league now. I mean, yesterday there was seven quarterbacks that threw for over 350 yards. You can't sit back anymore and try to take away, you know, what they want to do by sitting back and scheming it, because the players today are too athletic. The passing games are too exact. They're going to find cracks, and, you know, no matter who you are. And yet I look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, in my opinion, their cornerbacks are very ordinary. I don't think the Steelers' cornerbacks are very good, but they're successful because they put pressure on the quarterback, and they bring it from both sides. They bring it from the middle. They bring it from the safety. Occasionally, they'll blitz a corner, you know, and it covers up. Ike Taylor, to me, he's not an elite cornerback, but he's always successful because he doesn't have to cover very long.
No, listen, I agree with you about the Steelers. I actually like the way that they play, and I really hope that the Patriots really become more aggressive as the season, that maybe Belichick does in some occasions, you know, game plan specific, like this week, like Damian said. Why not? Why not go after the quarterback? Why not shoot the gaps? Guys, we have, believe it or not, only 2 minutes left, so Damian, I will give you your final thoughts on the Patriots' defense.
So I think we've pretty much covered it all, and something that I hadn't mentioned that Steve summed up perfectly was just pressure. You know, the Patriots need to blitz more, and they need to help out a young and inexperienced secondary, because the quarterback's been given too much time, and he's tearing them apart. And if we take away that time, our corners will be more successful, and that's pretty much the best way to sum it up.
I think the three of us all want the same thing, my friends. I think we all want a more aggressive style of defense. I do hope that we see it. Well, listen, the show is about to run down here. I want to thank both of you for joining me for this first show. It has been tremendous. I really enjoyed every minute of it. I can't believe the hour is coming up. My name is Russ Goldman. I've got Steve, and I've got Damian, also from PatsFans.com. I hope you guys come again and listen to our show. This is the first, but we're going to have many more. And any final thoughts, guys, real quick? Steve, final thoughts?
Thanks for having me, Russ. And cheers, Damian.
Damien, anything else you want to add before we get taken off the air?
No, that's it. Just like I say, thanks for having me on here. I'm looking forward to doing many more shows with you. So.
Okay, well, that was my final warning. We are about to end the show. Thanks again for checking out Patriots 4th and 2.